It's 8:06. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. 23 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And with all of the new snow, we will kick off our Utah Avalanche Forecast Center report, starting with this morning and Director Mark Staples. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Leslie. How's it going?
Doing well, thanks. So I'm guessing with new snow and wind, we've got some dangerous conditions out there?
We definitely do. You know, it's actually pretty tricky. If we had gotten quite a bit more snow, I think we would be seeing a lot of avalanches. We're kind of right at the borderline where the snow. We're not quite sure where the breaking point is for the snow, so we're being extra conservative. This is the first time our snowpack, our fledgling weak little snowpack, has received a big load, and so we're being extra conservative. And I'm a little nervous because you may or may not see avalanches or obvious signs of instability, but we definitely expect folks to trigger avalanches today if they get into avalanche terrain.
So in terms of the overall danger, you're calling it what? Considerable? High?
High. And we put out an avalanche warning.
Okay. So if people, well, you just recommend people don't go out, but you can get more information online at utahavalanchecenter.org.
That's correct. And you can scroll through observations that people have submitted and get more detailed info there as well.
Okay.
But, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to, is that it?
That's about it. It's pretty simple. Unless you are really on it, there are probably a few stable slopes you could find, but it's going to take a lot of work. And I think avalanche professionals could get surprised by the snowpack. It's pretty tricky.
Okay, Mark, thanks.
Okay.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08.
This avalanche report is made possible by SkiUtah.com and the Ski Utah app, a daily source for information. The greatest snow on earth.
8:08 now, and on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Adam Carroll. Hi, Adam.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Excellent. You know, the big time storm is pretty much on its way out of here. There's going to be some lingering snow showers here for much of the day up in Park City, and then a couple other quick little hitters over the next several days, bringing maybe a few inches all together for the Park City area. And, you know, by the time everything's said and done for the higher terrain, 3 to 6 and whatnot. But, you know, we have some other storm systems even farther down the road that are looking to be a little bit potentially bigger in size. But for the short term, we'll continue to see colder temps through midweek, and then we'll actually start getting close to that 40-degree mark for Park City proper. And the ski conditions right now, I mean, with the exception, of course, the avalanche dangers being high, are fantastic as we head into the big-time Christmas week season. And all told, as we head into Christmas, you know, the mountains could eventually see anywhere between 4 to 6 feet between this past storm and what's coming here over the next, week and a half. So that's fantastic news, not only for, of course, the economy, but also our snowpack.
Okay, great. Adam, thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
It's 8:10.
This KPCW weather report is brought to you in part by the law firm of Christopher K. Greenwood.
This is Randy Barton with the Local View, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. weekdays. Tune in. We feature and showcase local news from our award-winning news department, Leslie Thatcher, Rick Bruff, Lynn Ware Peak, and Renee Bodley. National news from NPR, international headlines with the BBC, Marketplace, your phone calls, public service announcements, lost and found, many voices, one show. Brought to you by Park City Live, Sammy's Bistro, Heber Valley Tourism, Miller Orthodontics, Matt and Missy Kelly, Park City Home Team.
It's 8:10 now. Good morning. Well, we've got 3 inches of new snow overnight at both Park City and Deer Valley Resorts, 25-inch bases, 18 lifts, 40 runs open at Park City with 3 parks, Snow Dancer and Silver Queen, today's picks of the day. 16 lifts, 36 runs open at Deer Valley with 25 of those runs groomed overnight with Deer Hollow, Success, and Birdseye. White Pine has received enough snow that they are able to groom both the 3 and 5K track, so all 8 kilometers of track groomed, and they have got classic tracks set on all 8 kilometers. The farm is closed, but it will get packed today. And as you just heard in the avalanche, in the backcountry there, being extra conservative, a weak snowpack with lots of new snow on top of it, an avalanche warning has been issued. Tricky conditions for even backcountry experts. Boy, taking a look at the Ski Utah Snow Report, Alta reporting 19 inches of new snow, 31 inches down at Bryan Head. Deer Valley, as we mentioned, 3 inches. Powder Mountain with 7 new inches, Snow Basin with 3 new inches, Snowbird reporting 18 new inches, and Solitude with 11, and Sundance with 4. We'll be back with the local news hour right after this.
This is Michelle from Peak Art and Frame, proud supporters of KPCW. Locally owned and operated, Peak Art and Frame features local photography and artwork, as well as digital printing, custom framing, and mirrors. Open 7 days a week, rush service available, located in the Walmart Shopping Center, 649-0801. PeakArtAndFrame.com.
Additional support for programming on KPCW is provided by Sammy's Bistro, now offering breakfast Thursdays to Sundays from 7 to 11 a.m. Peterson Calder Real Estate, Berkshire Hathaway, selling Park City since 1989. Experience ParkCity.com. Sean Potter, Estate Planning in Summit and Wasatch Counties, WasatchLawGroup.com, 647-5951. Done to Your Taste Catering, 21 years perfecting life celebrations. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
8:12 now. Good morning. Well, stay tuned in just a minute. We'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Later on in the hour, Bill Rock, CEO of Park City, will be in. Also, I'll be talking with Mark Connor. He's CEO of SkiPatrol.net. We'll be talking about yesterday's Ski Patrol union vote, which a narrow margin, Ski Patrollers locally, voting in a union. Recycle Utah Director Inza Riepen in with a monthly update. Megan Wagner is a recording coordinator with Deer Valley Resort, was scheduled to talk to us about Park City Welcome Night happening on Thursday. And finally, automotive journalists Paul Schmucker and Todd Deacon in to talk about their film Pilgrimage, which is screening tomorrow at the Jim Santee Auditorium. Right now on the phone with me, Tom Fisher, Summit County Manager. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
First off, you've got a meeting tonight to talk more about the proposed county fair site.
Yes, a big, you know, we signed the option for the 80 acres in the Hoytsville area a few weeks ago, and we wanted to make sure that we got out right away and met with folks in the area and anyone in the county that wants to come out tonight at 6 p.m. at the current fairgrounds. So that they understand and can help us understand what it is we want to do with this property and kind of talk through some of the issues that people might have with what we're proposing. So it's really just to update folks on where we're at right now in the project as we move into due diligence and explore that option. And then to hear people's ideas and concerns about the project.
So given the feedback, I mean, if it was all negative, I mean, would you consider not purchasing the property?
Well, you know, it's we have not gotten all negative feedback. We've gotten probably both positive and negative feedback. So it's hard to contemplate that we'd get all negative. But, you know, that's one of the reasons that you do an option on a property is, As you move through that process of exploring the option, doing all the due diligence, as well as working through the conditional use process on a project, you know, there's going to be a lot of public input to that. And, you know, if it ended up that the community wanted us to do something different, I'm sure we would consider that. But, you know, this project has been contemplated by county commissioners before county councils and for many years since the late 1980s. And, you know, it's exciting to see something moving forward and we want to hear what the public has to say.
Yeah. And as you mentioned to me before there, you just don't really have a lot of choice as to finding a parcel this size.
It is. It's difficult. And, you know, the county got really serious about it over the last 2 or 3 years. And this is where we're at right now. So, we're pushing forward. You know, obviously, having to go through that conditional use process and exploring an option on buying a property, that does not mean it's a done deal, and we want to make sure people understand that. But we're serious about the project itself.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a busy time of the year. Do you plan more public meetings? Or, I mean, the option, I guess, expires at the end of the year. You probably don't have a lot of time.
Well, it ends at the end of 2016, so we have a full year to explore this. There is going to be a public process. We plan on doing a kind of a public design process along with this, starting in January and February, as well as, you know, there's going to be the public hearings in front of a planning commission associated with that in the conditional use process. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity for public comment on this.
Okay. On taking a look at Wednesday's agenda, you'll be meeting at the county courthouse starting, let's see, at about 2:10 in a work session. Start off interviewing 10 candidates for 3 seats on the Snyderville Basin Recreation Board. So I guess that's exciting, just that you've got a lot of interest in it.
Absolutely thrilled that we've got this much interest in this board, and you know, it follows. There's always been interest in the recreation side and Snyderville Basin recreation. So, yeah, the council is going to spend the time in interviewing those candidates, and then they'll make a decision.
All right, haven't heard a lot about the North Summit Recreation Board. Are they active at all?
They are. In fact, you know, the mayor, Mayor Johnson up in Colville has been talking to them in relation to, you know, what if the fairgrounds moves and the Colville City gets that property reverted back to themselves and what they do with that. So, you know, those kind of things have been going on around that whole subject of the county building and event center.
All right. Also on the agenda, a discussion with regards to extending the development agreement for Promontory. Can you give us just a little bit of history here? It's interesting that something like this is expiring.
Well, I mean, it's part of the SPA, the specially planned area agreement, or especially that agreement. And you know, I don't know all the history, and I did not prepare enough well with our attorneys in order to do that. But I do know that. In talking to Pat Putt, our planning director, that his judgment is that they have fulfilled significantly fulfilled the obligations of their agreement, mostly in dealing with paying fees for open space, ag preservation, affordable housing, the kind of things that were included in this agreement. And our attorney's office is making the recommendation to council that they extend the agreement.
Yeah.
I have to admit that's about as much as I know about that subject at this point.
All right. So you don't know what the county actually reviews to determine if Promontory has complied with its development agreement?
I did not check that out specifically yesterday, so I'm not going to be able to represent that today.
All right. Again, we've got a budget discussion and a final public hearing. Basically, what, no tax increase and the budget a little bit more than it was last year once you include the capital projects?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that it's not the final hearing. We discovered yesterday that we missed a public posting that we have to do in the newspaper. So we're going to have one more hearing on the 28th of December, Monday the 28th, to finalize the budget. So that's an update. But yes, there's no tax increase in the budget. Actually, the operations budget goes down by a little over $300,000. The overall budget goes up because of carryover of capital projects. But a very solid budget. Fund balances are staying within the projected tolerances that the county wants. So we're feeling pretty good about it.
All right. We've added how many new staff positions?
We added 5 new staff positions and increased 2 positions from part-time to full-time. So the Children's Justice Center Executive Director will go to a full-time position, and we're adding one position within the Auditor's Office is going to go from part-time to full-time.
Well, you very rarely get any comment on a budget, and the fact that you got somebody there last week asking for more building inspectors, did that make a difference? I mean, are you going to help them out?
It certainly does. I mean, budgets are budgets are the biggest policy decision we make each year. And, you know, we really enjoy it when people come in and participate with that. So, you know, there are issues with growth within our building industry in the county. So in reaction to that, the council decided to increase the amount of money in a line item for contracted services. You know, as the building industry ebbs and flows during the year, so on those high peaks, our building chief inspector can hire some extra staff or contract with extra staff in order to meet those inspection deadlines.
All right. I want to ask, though, I mean, you say that you missed a posting, hence the need for a special meeting on December 28th to finalize the budget. Is this the clerk's job to get those postings done?
You know, I'm going to take responsibility for this. The budget is under my purview as of 2015, and because that we lost some staff in the auditor's office over the last year due to retirement, we missed an item on the list of things that we were supposed to do, and it's the 7-day public newspaper notice before the final hearing, and so I missed that, and we're putting it in the newspaper as of Wednesday, and it will meet the state law for a hearing on Monday.
Okay, it just vaguely sounds familiar that something like this happened earlier this year where something couldn't be finalized. I can't put my finger on it, but, you know, until 30...
I remember that, too, but I think that was a different issue, and the budget is very specific. So it used to be the auditor when the auditor was in charge of the budget, but now it's me, so... It's my doing.
Okay, that's not going to happen again, right?
it's already written down.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else then that you wanted to mention? Again, we've got public input at 6 o'clock on the budget. People are interested.
Yeah, you know, I don't really have anything else to mention except that you know, we're getting into that time where our transportation system is going to get stressed because of our holiday traffic. And I just want to encourage people to find alternative means or change their routing throughout the day so that we can maximize the system we have.
Okay, Tom. Well, we'll probably won't talk to you till next year, but happy holidays. Thanks.
Happy holidays to you as well.
It's Tom Fisher, Summit County Manager, KPCW News Time, 8:23.
Hi, this is State Farm Agent Benita Vanderkoy, longtime supporter of KPCW. With over 23 years of State Farm experience, I assist clients with insurance and financial services needs in Wasatch and Summit counties. My new office is located in the Redstone Shopping Center near Whole Foods. I can still be reached at 435-657-2220.
Mark Baker here from Esco Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical, and we are the proud sponsors of the Marketplace Morning Report on KPCW. Small undetected leaks can cause thousands of dollars in damages. Your home's plumbing system should be inspected and serviced every year. More information at escoutah.com or 855-ESCO-NOW.
Hi, this is David Jensen, the director of the Habitat for Humanity Restore in Park City. As our daily customers know, every visit is a new adventure since we receive beautiful furniture and building materials from local donors every 10 minutes. And your purchase helps families in our area. Check out our popular Facebook page to see more. And as always, the Restore is open to the public Wednesday through Saturday, and we're proud to be a local nonprofit KPCW supporter.
This is Kelly Miller with Assemble Park City, a proud KPCW underwriter. Assemble offers a co-working space that provides a modern collaborative space for you to do your work on the web at assembleparkcity.com.
KPCW News Time now, 8:24. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, Park City ski patrollers have voted narrowly to join a union. A short email was sent out to patrollers yesterday evening telling them that they had been given the opportunity to vote on whether or not Park City Ski Patrol team would be represented by the Communication Workers of America. According to that email, preliminary results show that employees voted 97 for representation, 94 against. The email went on to say that the National Labor Relations Board has a process to officially certify the results, and as soon as that process is completed, patrollers will be given more information. This is the first year as a merged resort under one owner, Vail Resorts, And those patrollers previously employed at Canyons Resort had formed a union, the Canyons Professional Ski Patrol Association. But when the two resorts merged, those union members were in minority, which then forced the vote. In the studio with me to talk about that, I have the CEO of Park City, Bill Rock. And on the phone with me, I have Mark O'Connor. He is the CEO of SkiPatrol.net, an advocacy group for ski patrollers. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, well, let's start with you, Bill. Are you surprised by the vote?
This, as we said earlier, this integration of the two resorts to create one team has really been our focus all along. And we knew with a legacy union at Canyons that this question would come up. And the big picture for us was we wanted our patrol to be able to have a voice and to be able to say whether they wanted to be represented or not. And so an election was held, and as you know, very narrow election, and certainly shows the two different perspectives. But I think, you know, today, this morning, when we woke up, our focus is on great guest service, safety on the mountain, and delivering a great experience for our guests.
Now, is this the only company, a resort that Vail Resorts owns that has a union? Or
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so the first time. So you don't, this is new terrain for you here.
It very much is, yeah.
Yeah. And let me talk to you a little bit about Mark. My understanding is that Park City, this makes only the eighth union in the country that has a union?
Yes, it's not something that is widely used. And again, it's only professional patrols that are members of unions because of the nature of patrol work. About 80 to 90% of the patrollers around the country do it on a volunteer basis. So only the very large resorts that have full-time staffs have looked into this, and there are eight, and about half of those are located at Aspen. They're associated with Aspen Resorts.
All right, so maybe you can just explain for us, I mean, why this is what you think is probably a good thing.
I wouldn't say it's a good thing for everyone, but certainly it appears that what we're talking about here at Park City for the patrollers is a good thing. The focus really needs to be on making ski patrolling, where it is a full-time job, something that they can get a living wage for, remain safe, and just basically become more productive at what they do and not have to retrain their patrol every couple of years because people just can't afford to be full-time paid patrollers. I think there are several issues associated with that, and different mountains are able to deal with it differently. And here, it appears to be working very well at the former Canyons Resort, and it looks like now they're considering extending it to the entire resort.
Yeah. So what does that then mean for, you know, Vail Resorts? I mean, do they then have to collect union dues, or do folks pay it separately, or?
Is the question to me, Mark?
That's to you, Mark, yeah.
Yes. Well, I'm not an expert on how the payments go, but I believe it goes to the union, and the patrollers themselves would pay their 1% or between 1% and 2% of whatever their salary is to the union itself, and they're represented by, again, they say the Communications Workers of America, but it's a professional union that focuses on ski patrolling underneath that is really the organization that they'll be paying the dues to.
Okay, and I thought that was interesting, why ski patrollers would be part of a communication worker union. That's just how it's organized?
Sure. Well, it's the United Professional Ski Patrols of America union, and it's within the AFL-CIO's Communications Workers of America as the oversight organization that helped them organize.
All right. So, Bill, in terms of the breakdown, I mean, that very close vote, I mean, we've got ski patrollers, I think, basically sticking to where they were, right? All the folks working at Canyons are still at Canyons Village, and the Park City folks are on the Park City. Is that how the vote broke?
It's hard to say. You know, with these votes, they're anonymous votes, and so you don't get exit polling or anything that you get in normal political elections. I guess the good news on the vote was it was virtually 100% participation. And our goal all along was to give people information so they can make an informed decision about whether this was the right way they wanted to interact with the company. And it was obviously a very tight vote. but we respect their, you know, their right to organize, and we look forward to bargaining in good faith with the group.
Yeah. So does that give you any heartburn, given that it was such a close vote? You don't really know. I mean, it's all it took was a simple majority.
Yeah, I think, you know, our preference all along, and we haven't been shy about it, was that we'd like to have a direct relationship with our employees. We've got a great track record of incredible employee experience in our company, great career development, you know, a track record of safety, et cetera. And so really it came down to the employees and whether they felt like bargaining collectively was in their best interest versus a direct relationship with us.
Yeah. Do you have any concerns about dealing with a union? I mean, does it really matter one way or the other? Will you?
I think, you know, our goal is to create one team, one resort, best guest experience, you know, in the business. And so that hasn't changed. And we want to continue to drive for that end result no matter what. It adds a little complexity to it. But one thing I think both groups could agree on was that we wanted to get back to work and do what we love to do. And today's the first day to do that.
Yeah. And I guess what I guess I hear you telling me is that if this is what the employees want, then that's good for business to keep the employees happy.
Well, what I'd say is they voted to do this. It's their right to do it. And we'll bargain in good faith.
All right. Now, as I mentioned, a simple majority of those voting was all that was needed to form the union. My understanding is that management has a short window to contest the vote. Do you plan to do that or
So there's a, as you mentioned in the opening, the NLRB certifies the election after, I think it's 7 days. During that time, either side could file objections. And so, you know, I'm not sure what course of action we might take around that, but it won't be certified for 7 days.
Okay. And then at that point, what would changes for Vail Resorts?
Again, this is pretty new to this is pretty new to me, but I think what happens next, that once the election's certified, the union would be on them to create a bargaining committee, and to create to reach out to us to schedule collective bargaining, and we're both obligated to bargain in good faith.
Yeah. So does the existing Canyons? Well, it was existing until yesterday. Canyon Ski Patrol Association. Does that just dissolve, or does that take precedence? I mean, is that rule for everybody at this point?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I think, you know, during the campaign, folks did ask questions about leadership of the subsequent union and how that would work, and I don't know how they're planning on addressing that.
Mark, can you answer that?
No, I can't. I know that during negotiations, as he said, there was talk of having the Park City Patrol join in, and I guess this is how it was resolved. There was the vote held now. And it appears that they'll be, if Vail Resorts decides to go that route, to negotiate together.
Okay. All right. Anything else, Bill, you wanted to mention on that?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I this is an event that's happened, but I don't want to lose focus on what's going on this week and this season. We're going to open the gondola on Thursday to the public, grand opening on Friday. And, you know, all the $50 million of investments will be showcased. This natural snow we just got helped us open Tombstone and a bunch more terrain. So, you know, we're going to move on trying to create the best resort in the United States. And that's what really motivates the whole team.
Okay. Bill and Mark, any final thoughts?
No, it sounds like they're all on the same page now. And they'll be focusing forward on customer service.
Okay. Mark O'Connor, Bill Rock, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:34.
Hi, this is Lauren Forsyth with Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates, supporting my hometown radio station, KPCW. Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates offers legal services in criminal, DUI, family, divorce, personal injury, and real estate. Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates at the Gateway Center, 655-3680.
Hi, I'm Davey Ratchard, Marketing Director for Park City and proud supporter of KPCW. The Epic Mix mobile app is designed to help you capture and share your ski and snowboard experience across Park City's 17 peaks, 14 bowls, 300 trails, and 7,300 acres. More information at parkcitymountain.com.
KPCW News Time now, 8:35. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, now in the studio with a monthly update about what's going on at Recycle Utah, I have Director Inza Reben. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Busy time of year, I know, for you. Right?
It is. We are getting more stuff, which is just wonderful because we accept it all with sort of one-stop shopping. So it is the season of packaging. We accept it all. from all of the cardboard boxes to the new electronic waste that you might be creating by getting a new television, a new printer, a new something. And please respect the rules of our local churches that do not accept your electronic waste. The options in Summit County are that you can go to the landfill or come to Recycle Utah. You have that opportunity every day except for Sundays. And yes, there is a cost connected with getting rid of your old CRTs. Those are the heavy-duty televisions. So if you get new toys, bring us the old ones and make sure that we can guarantee that they will be recycled responsibly.
Okay. And then people can also bring their old-style Christmas lights?
Yes, indeed. Of course, we're all switching to LEDs. And there are mountains and mountains and mountains of the old ones. So bring those to us. And the only thing that can happen to those is that the wires be stripped and recycled, the rest of it, all of the little lights, all of the plastic stuff. That's just garbage. But at least we can strip the wires and bring those to us and switch to LEDs.
But can people just bring you everything?
They can bring us everything.
Okay.
Yes.
You'll take care of the stripping part.
No, we don't. We send it out and we have to pay for that service. But it's totally worth it because there's just tons of this stuff out there. So bring them on out, and we're open daily from 8 until 5:30, except for Sundays.
Okay. And another winter program is the recycling of skis, snowboards, and poles, as well as helmets and boots, huh?
Yes, and the interesting thing about that is that we do accept the skis, snowboards, and poles for free. However, there are fees that apply for boots and helmets. And the free stuff is thanks to our bin sponsor, or program sponsor, Silver Star Ski and Sport. And we are working on a bigger picture solution for this kind of waste stream. And I'm very, very happy to have found someone at the Green Sports Alliance, a nationwide organization. And we're hoping that within 2 to 3 years, we will have a final product that can be generated out of our winter sports gear. There is a lot of it. It's all welcome at the landfill, no worries. But if we can avoid that, because skis and snowboards would hang around forever. But it is more packaging. We see more and more packaging. And please know that the unique service that we have is that we do accept the EPS, the styrofoam, the white blocks, and we have mountains of that stuff coming through. That does never, ever in any form go into your curbside bin. And I see it going in there all the time. It is not going to be recycled. It creates a huge problem at the other end. So bring it to us.
All right. And you and I have talked about this briefly, but there are new ways to package stuff now without the styrofoam, and it's using just like compressed cardboard or something?
Definitely, definitely. So a greener product is certainly something that would use corrugated cardboard that is shaped just the way EPS does. Cardboard is always recyclable. Right now, as you've probably heard, there's a total dropout of the recycling market, which means anything that you bring to us, we pay for. That is just what's happening in the industry based on the Asian market. But we have seen this before, just not to this extent.
Yeah. And it's kind of like the week after Christmas, you just get bombarded. You're asking for some volunteer help?
It would be great for anybody, especially companies that are green-minded, to come and send their employees to us. And there are some that actually do, where their employees every season have to spend a total of 20 hours with us. And it's greatly, greatly appreciated, because those are usually young people that have the energy and the means to run around as we have to, and help us clean and sort and sort and sort. Because, as you know, it's very enticing to have the curbside bin and stuff it all in there. But you should not expect that everything that you stuff in there also gets recycled. And the problem there is really when you unpack your gift and you have this large black plastic bag in which you stick everything, the wrapping paper and the bows and the ribbons, if you leave it all together, there's very little that can happen with it. So when you come to this center, we ask you to separate. That's what our center is about. And yes, we will accept your bows and ribbons, but only if you take them off the paper. And we will be out there talking to you. Are there ribbons in there? Are there bows in there? Here's the carton. This is where it goes. And then we can guarantee that it will actually be recycled. So a little bit of work and sorting is needed to make the recycling process happen.
All right. So if people are interested in volunteering, they can just, what, contact the center?
Yes, give us a call, send us an email, recycleutah.org. And at the end of the year, it's always a good time to look at the other gear that you might have. We do offer car recycling, as many other nonprofits do as well. It's an easy way for you to get rid of the clunker in your driveway or in your garage. So just for the last week, we have gotten 3 cars, and that means that somebody says, I have an old car, I want to get rid of it, what's your program? And our program has to do with giving it, as we say, a green grave, and that means that all of the fluids and the switches that are dangerous will be taken out before it gets crushed or, you know, harvested for parts, and then you get the tax credit. And somebody comes all the way up here to pick it up, so give this a chance if you want to get rid of your car. Very, very important. And lastly, we have conversations going out for our relocation. There is now a committee that is meeting on a monthly basis with city and county officials to hopefully find a new location for Recycle Utah, which a lot of people ask about all the time. So here it is. There are active negotiations going on, and we hope that something will happen soon.
What are your minimum requirements?
We need more space, and we need to not be at the end of the street. We, as you know, get a minimum of 260 cars every day. And if you multiply that out, for a dead-end street location, that's more than 90,000 cars per year. That's an enormous number of cars. And we have had visitors from out of state recently, and they said, we can't believe what's happening here. So our children are making their parents do the right thing. They think about our earth. They think about what we can do here in Park City. And we offer incredibly wonderful programs, and we reach many kids. Since the beginning of the school year, we will have talked to 2,500 kids, which is incredible for Summit and Wasatch County. So the message is being heard. It's getting out there now. We just have to find a better way, a safer way for us to deal with the with all the cars that we have coming.
All right. Well, and you just expanded your program to Wasatch County then?
We have done that for a number of years. Just Heber Valley Elementary School has allowed us to come in, and we've been there for the last 2.5 weeks. And we want to thank the teachers for making that happen, because it does take away from their teaching time. But yes, we feel that Summit and Wasatch County are growing together very quickly, and the message is welcome, and it needs to be out there.
Okay. And again, you are closed Christmas Day and New Year's Day. Please.
Yes, please
honor that.
Please honor that our staff needs a little bit of off time to celebrate the holidays. And yep, that's all. Come and see us any day, especially between Christmas and New Year.
Okay, we'll see you next month, Insa.
Thanks.
Insa Riepen is director of Recycle Utah. KPCW News Time now, 8:43.
I'm Jim Weber, Park City resident, owner of Foothill Oriental Rugs, supporting KPCW for 25 years. Our Salt Lake City store actually sells to rug dealers throughout the U.S. We have a huge selection and encourage our customers to live with our carpets in their home prior to purchase to ensure it is the right piece. We are located 2 minutes north of the canyon in Salt Lake City at 1460 Foothill Drive. FoothillOrientalRugs.com.
KPCW News Time now, 8:44. Good morning. Well, Rocky Mountain Power is planning an outage in the Prospector Square area early tomorrow morning. Rick Bruff has more on that.
Power Company spokeswoman Margaret Oler said the outage will affect some 390 customers in the area of Bonanza Drive and Prospector Avenue. She said it's set for Wednesday the 16th from 1 to 5 a.m.
And according to the information that I've got here, is it will go off all at the same time and should come back all at the same time as well. It's scheduled for 4 hours. That's a good estimate. Of course, we always try to be a little quicker, but it is winter. It is cold. It is the middle of the night.
The work, which is upgrading electric lines, is set for the morning to minimize the impacts.
But they will be switching out some equipment, and periodically the system just has to be upgraded a little bit. And so they're going to replace that equipment so that it prevents, hopefully, an unexpected expected outage. This way, folks can make some preparations ahead of time.
Margaret Oler from Rocky Mountain Power. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of contemporary and mountain modern home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake and offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
15 minutes now before 9 o'clock, and in the studio with me from the Kimball Arts Center, I have the Development Director, Tony Tacchino. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks. So you're inviting everybody over to Whole Foods today?
We are. We want, like, everybody to come out to Whole Foods today. You know, every quarter, what Whole Foods does is they donate 5%.
Let me get that microphone turned around.
Got it. Better.
They get to pull it up. There you go.
They donate 5% of their net sales to an organization in the community, and they chose the Kimball Art Center today. So we'll be out there with artist demos and kids activities, and everybody who goes in grocery shops, 5% of their bill will go and support the Kimball Art Center and our exhibitions and education programs and things that we do out at the center.
All right. So how much do you usually raise?
You know, last year we did this and we raised about $3,000. And this year we just have so much going on in the store during the day. We have two really amazing artists who are going to be out. Mott Sonier is going to be doing a charcoal drawing demonstration. And then Jean LeRae, who's been a longtime teacher at the Kimball, and she also does, you know, a lot for our arts festival during the summer. She'll be doing a painting demonstration. So I think with a lot more going on in the store, we're hoping to kind of beat that this year.
Great. So. Again, and that's happening from now till...
Right. It's happening today until the store closes today. So, you know, with the holidays going on, I mean, Whole Foods always has a lot going on in their store during the holidays. They have, you know, they're so into food, and everybody who works there really likes getting into the holidays. And so being able to go in at this time of year is just exciting for us to go in and be a part of what they're doing.
And you'll be located where? I mean, these... different stations.
You know, we're actually going to be right in front of the cash registers. So we're going to be right there, probably wearing coats because it's a little bit cold, but just right in front where people will be able to see us, and, you know, we'll be able to see the people who are there shopping and, you know, thank everybody. But it's a good day to go out and do a little bit of shopping and, you know, get into the store.
Okay. And then in terms of what you got at the Kimball, that display, the iconic exhibit is going away here, what, in the next few weeks?
It is. So people have the holidays to get in and see Picture in the Iconic. It is coming down January 3rd. So there's still a little bit of time. And over the holidays, it's a good time to go in and see it. You know, people usually have a little bit of extra time to go in. And then we have a really, really fun exhibition going in afterwards, of course. But, you know, Picturing the Iconic, you know, being able to go in and see Andy Warhol and Kara Walkers and things like that is something that doesn't come around often. And so if you haven't seen it yet, you know, try and get in before January 3rd and, you know, see what we have in there.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, that's everything. Thank you so much.
Okay. KPCW News Time now, 8:48.
This is Rich Fine with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, supporting all Park City High School sports and the Minor Details Show on KPCW. I offer personalized service with up-to-date technology and market knowledge to match clients with properties. More information about Park City Real Estate at our Redstone office or online at richfine.com.
Each week, KPCW produces 5 public affairs programs. At 9 a.m. weekdays, join us for Mountain Money on Mondays. Tuesdays, it's This Green Earth. The Mountain Life on Wednesdays. Cool Science Radio on Thursdays. And on Fridays, it's The Morning Mix. Sponsored in part by San Francisco Design, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, and Park City. Get all the details and listen to archive shows anytime at kpcw.org.
KPCW News Time now, 8:49. Well, yesterday's storm didn't produce enough snow to call off school. There was a glimmer of hope for school kids. For the Park City School District, though, it was a good dress rehearsal in how to best get out of the word that school is off, or in this case, school was on. Lynn Peek has more about that.
Acting Park City Schools Superintendent Todd Hauber said that on Monday morning, while there wasn't a huge amount of snow, just 4 to 6 inches, they realized that the roads were bad enough that parents wanted to know for certain if school was indeed on. In any storm, Hauber said, the school district begins in the middle of the night assessing the situation.
So in the past, we have our transportation people stay in contact with the city and county snow removal crews, and that conversation starts about 2 or 3 in the morning. And then we assess through their observations what the situation is. Are we able to get our buses up into some of the neighborhoods that are high in the mountains and stuff? And so that then comes from the transportation department into the superintendent's office to say, yep, the roads are clear, we're good to go. And what we could have done better today was make sure that the word was out that schools were open. I was more concerned about whether I had to get the word out that they were closed. And in those events, we push out phone messages and text messages through our information system.
But with so many connected these days by social media, just one mention of a possibility of no school can start off widespread speculation. So while it used to take a truly horrific blizzard to make people wonder, now Hauber says it may be best to communicate that school is on during these questionable storms.
What we could have done better today was make sure that the word was out that schools were open. I was more concerned about whether I had to get the word out that they were closed. And in those events, we push out phone messages and text messages through our information system.
When you register your child for school, you can opt into the district's information system.
So most of them are enrolled. When they register at the beginning of the year, they provide us their contact information, and we pull that into our database and use that. If they feel that they're not in the loop, just contact your school secretary, and they can get your information in, and we'll get you on the database.
That's Park City Schools Acting Superintendent Todd Hauber. I'm Lynn Ware, Peak, KPCW News.
8:52 now, good morning. Well, anyone who is a car enthusiast is invited to the Jim Santee Auditorium tomorrow night to watch the film Pilgrimage. In the studio with details, I have Paul Schmucker and Todd Deacon, who are co-host of Everyday Driver and bringing the film to Park City. Good morning to both of you.
Yeah, good morning.
Good
Thank
morning.
You so
Thanks
much
for having us.
Okay, so Paul, do you want to start? Begin with telling us what Everyday Driver is?
Yeah, absolutely. Todd and I are co-hosts of Everyday Driver, and you can think of it as Siskel and Ebert about cars. Remember those movie critique guys? It's Todd and I debating the merits of various cars. Mm-hmm. And so we get both differing opinions, usually differing. But it's about, you know, enthusiast driving. You hear Everyday Driver, we want you to think enthusiast driver. So, yeah. You know, you just go for a fun drive.
Well, but it's also just the fact of any kind of car. We try to focus, the reason for that title is we try to focus on cars less than 50 grand. So it's average person money. It's real person money. It's not, hey, I bought a $200,000 car. Those are fun, but who's that for? It's not for everyone. So we're trying to get you into cars that you can really afford, that meet your needs, but are also fun. And you can have one SUV that's more fun than another. It's not just about sports cars. It's about cars that can be fun to drive, that you can really love, that also meet your needs.
Right. So we also do a car debate as well. You can you might be able to tell we're used to being on radio, being on air, so we do a car debate. People email us, say, what kind of car should I buy?
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to help them figure out fun cars and what they should buy. So that's what led us to this film, actually.
Okay, well, we're going to get to that, though. But so how do people hear you? I mean, you're on the internet?
It's every Tuesday, it's a podcast called The Car Debate. And every Thursday, it's a video, which is on YouTube and also on our website.
Yeah.
So it's video every week and podcast every week. And they're very different. I mean, the video is much more of a cinematic TV show feel, the two of us just having a discussion. The podcast is much more, as Paul's saying, it's people writing in and going, here's my situation. What do you guys think?
Yeah, exactly right.
And that's your background, though. I mean, you love cars, Todd, but you're a filmmaker.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we both moved here from L.A., even though we have a different background. We both moved from L.A. We met there. And so all of my adult life has been working in the film industry in one way or another. So I brought that to this and wanted to really focus on making high-quality stuff. And that was one of the reasons. I mean, the YouTube stuff is fun, but we wanted to do large-scale projects. So we started about 3 years ago. We started doing a feature film a year, and this is our third one.
Great.
That's right.
So Pilgrimage, what's that all about?
Pilgrimage is about Todd and Paul. We went to Germany. We had an opportunity to go to Germany, and it's funny because when you think of a car enthusiast, they say, oh, you're going to drive the Autobahn. You're going to drive fast cars.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we did. We went to two famous racetracks, the Nürburgring Nordschleife and Spa-Francorchamps in Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
So both of those are famous for races throughout Formula One calendar. A lot of famous races held on those tracks, and we got to drive some other fun exotics and set some personal bests on the Autobahn. A lot of fun.
Yeah, so got to drive, or did you get to just film, or did you get to drive too?
Oh, no, that's the thing. I mean, I bring the filming background, but one of the things when we started this was for both of us to get time behind the wheel. I mean, one of the things that frustrated me in Hollywood as a writer-director was sometimes the actor's doing something where you're just like, I really want to do that. And with this show, I get to drive as well, which is wonderful.
Right.
Did you see the 60-minute piece? Charlie Rose. Oh, gosh.
No.
Sunday night, Charlie Rose got to go in with, what's his name, Lewis Hamilton,
Formula
One?
Sure, yes.
Yeah. Oh,
fantastic.
That was fun. That was fun. Well, the film it's a free screening.
Yes.
Tomorrow night, 6:30 p.m.
Correct. Over here at the Jim Sani Auditorium, and it's 80 minutes in length, so it's a feature-length film. And, we put it together as our third film and are coming on air to invite everybody. So if you're into cars, we'd love to have you.
I mean, that's the thing. The film is offered. It's offered online. People can find it on Vimeo. They can get a Blu-ray on Amazon, and that has a lot of extras. But we wanted to have a big screening with an audience. I mean, that's not really going to happen otherwise. We thought, all right, we'll do it locally here. We'll open it to everybody.
Right.
And we're just looking forward to it.
So this is home for you both.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, let's talk briefly. We have a few more minutes. What about the Volkswagen debacle? Have you guys debated that?
We have. We've actually discussed this ad nauseum. And I think the biggest takeaway that we've discussed, because people have written to us saying, so I've got one of those cars. What should I do? And it's not that Volkswagen is poor engineering. The cars are still fast. They're great. They're well engineered. They're comfortable, quiet, all those things that people want. But unfortunately, they pollute more than we thought.
Yeah.
So it's not that they're a bad car to own. They just pollute more. That, I think, is the biggest takeaway that Todd and I came away with.
That's one thing we discussed. We also discussed about the fact, unfortunately, they sold a lot of those TDIs as clean diesels. Clearly, that wasn't the case.
Right.
So that's been malicious. You take that compared to the GM ignition scandal, which clearly was negligent, but it wasn't on purpose. This clearly was an on-purpose thing, which makes it really bad. However, having said that, I think it grows more from, clearly, they 10 years ago said, we want to be the largest car maker in the world. Well, now you're dealing with volume, and you're dealing with, what's our quarterly report, and what do our stock holders say? And so that's different than let's make the best car that does this really well.
Yeah.
So at some point, I think, and I'm guessing, speculating here, but at some point, you have to have changes of, well, let's make this happen because our goal is just sell more versus make the best. And I think clearly that corporate reality created this situation. But as Paul said, we've been laughing with people because a Volkswagen GTI, great performance car, great all-purpose hatchback, we know people now that listen to the show that are getting those for a steal because Volkswagen wants your money.
Now
it's not affected in the TDI thing. So go get a GTI.
Please come take our money.
Yeah,
we want to sell cars.
Well, hey, let's talk briefly about this. So electric cars. I've been kind of looking at those, given that I'm driving an O2 Saturn that I can't get a hubcap for.
Wow. Really?
But, yeah. Yeah, seriously.
But so it'd be free parking. It'd be free gas, basically, because it's right outside here.
Yeah.
But should I wait for the Tesla?
We've driven the Tesla. We have not driven the all-wheel drive model, and I've been thinking, here and... Oh, you have?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Yeah. What did you think?
Awesome. It goes like 0 to 80 in like 5 seconds.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's quick. And you think, all right, now it's offered with all-wheel drive. You can actually retrofit prior Tesla S models.
Yes,
you can pay the upgrade. It's $14,000 or whatever. And so I'm thinking, well, this might be a perfect car for Park City. And as a matter of fact, I'm starting to see a lot more around. Funny enough, the biggest market is Norway because of the tax on fuel, on oil and diesel and gasoline engines there. And they live in snowy climates, too. So I'm thinking, well, they've already kind of figured it out.
I mean, it really comes down, to answer your question, how much are you going to drive? Because the big thing that the Tesla does is it does, 250, 300 miles to the charge, which is most people's gas tank. So you kind of take away that, how do I do this? But I know a few people in this area that drive the Leaf, and they love it. I mean, the thing about these electric cars, the Leaf is, I'll just use that for a minute, it's only got about 100-mile range. But how much do you actually drive? So if it meets your life, I mean, I'll be candid. These are not fun cars to drive. The Tesla is fun because it feels like a roller coaster. The Leaf is not a fun car to drive, but it is a great car in the way that it works. And so if you're not going to drive more than 100 miles in a day, they've got really good seat heaters because that helps keep you warm better than using the electricity to run the heater. And if it works for your life and your distance, they can be great. And that instant torque is something most people aren't used to. You put your foot in and suddenly you're like, wow, that's just fun.
But what was even more weird is you take your foot off and you brake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what that was the most.
The brakes.
Yeah, that most interesting.
It actually can change your driving. The Tesla has calibrated it well enough. It can change your driving to the point that you can take your foot off the gas and actually learn to almost drive the car just with the gas pedal, which is really interesting.
Yeah. It really was. Okay, again, a free screening of Pilgrimage tomorrow night, 6:30 p.m. at the Jim Sante Auditorium. Everyone's welcome to come.
Mm-hmm.
You guys sound like some fun guys. Real quick, I got 30 seconds. So what was your first car?
My first car was a 77 Jeep Cherokee that was, my dad had it undercoated after he drove it in the salt and rust of, you know, the salt of Minnesota, so it rusted, and then he undercoated and sealed in the rust. It was terrible.
And how about you, Todd?
I had an old Caprice Classic. It looked like a cop car, though I was not a cop.
64 Carmen Ghia.
Ooh,
I missed that car. I wish
sure
I would have hung on to it.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's all right, well, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 9 o'clock.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.
This is KPCW Park City Time for News.